The future of reporting now.
This is Concordia News Radio.
And cloudy in Montreal. I'm Amanda DeFullo, and here are today's headlines. Starting today, travelers coming back to Canada will be required to stay in a COVID-designated hotel for 3 days. Tomorrow will be the first meeting between President Joe Biden and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and it's National Walk Your Dog Day. Today, more than ever, it's time to bring your furry friend on a walk. The latest COVID-19 numbers have just been released by the Quebec government. The province is now lost over 10,000 lives over the course of the pandemic. Yesterday, over 805 cases were confirmed and further 2 deaths. That brings the total number of cases close to 282,000. Over 13,000 people were also vaccinated, bringing the total to over 340,000 vaccinated Canadians. This past weekend, Quebec reported its lowest daily COVID case increase in months, with the lowest number since September of last year. Yesterday, there were 805 new cases. Montreal was the most affected area in Quebec, with 330 of those cases and 4 deaths. That's about half of the province's reported cases concentrated in one area. As of today, most travelers entering Canada will be required to comply to new travel restrictions. Travelers will be required to stay in a government-authorized hotel for 3 days prior to departure to Canada. A majority of passengers will be required to take a COVID test after landing and will be required to stay in a hotel at their own expense until they get their test results. Then they'll be allowed to finish the rest of their 14-day quarantine period. There are currently 18 listed quarantine hotels. Passengers must pre-book hotels, and currently they can't be booked on third-party platforms. Bookings are being done exclusively through phones. Many travelers who purchased plane tickets prior to the global pandemic and want their money back are out of luck. Lots of airlines are issuing travel credits instead of refunds. But after one Quebec couple took their case to small claims court and won, some travelers are thinking of doing the same. Gabrielle Sambito has a story.
Paola Forlini purchased her plane ticket from Air Transat in February of 2020. Her plan was to travel to Europe this past summer. Like many Canadians, she received a travel credit from the airline for the cancelled flight. And while the Air Transat credit does not have any expiration date, she says she does not feel safe traveling anytime soon.
And I don't think this pandemic is ending anytime soon. And I don't feel the confidence of traveling in the future. So I don't think they should hold my money for a service that was not rendered.
The European Union took legal action demanding that all airlines reimburse people who purchase plane tickets originating from the EU. In Canada, consumer advocacy groups have asked the Canadian government to pass a similar bill, but so far, no government action has been taken. Flexible plane tickets, which come at a higher cost, are refundable, but standard fare tickets are not. The Quebec couple are one of the few people who saw their money come back to them for a non-refundable ticket. They had planned a trip to the Dominican Republic prior to the first wave of the pandemic. Although small claims are usually won on a case-by-case basis, Forlini says each passenger has their reason for a refund request. Forlini believes that filing a demand letter will get the airline to review and reconsider her claim. If not, she plans on taking the matter to small claims court. For Concordia News, I'm Gabriele Zambito.
Despite COVID-19, thousands of Australians attended the Australian Open tennis tournament live in Melbourne over the past 2 weeks. Novak Djokovic and Naomi Osaka are this year's Grand Slam champions, both achieving historic milestones. Our reporter Bogdan Livinenko has more. Hi Bogdan, so tell us more about the champions and what they have achieved in the middle of this pandemic.
Hi Amanda, so the world number one Novak Djokovic dominated the final round of the Australian Open, defeating the Russian Daniil Medvedev in straight sets, 7-5, 6-2, and 6-2. The Serbian player won his 9th Australian Open title, more than anybody else has in tennis history, which now puts him at just 2 Grand Slams away from the other legends of the sport, Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer. Meanwhile, on the women's side, world number 3, Naomi Osaka from Japan, won her 4th Grand Slam at the young age of 22, and she even had to battle against Serena Williams in the semifinals. Now, both winners received $2.75 million, However, this prize was 30% smaller than what the amount was in 2020 before COVID-19.
So did the pandemic affect anything else at the Australian Open?
Yes, the pandemic affected, unfortunately, all tennis fans in Australia. The stadium was only operating at 50% capacity, so 30,000 spectators were allowed to attend. However, masks were mandatory at all times in all indoor courts. Now, it was still one of the most significant international events in months, thanks to the strict lockdown that Melbourne had to go through for 112 days. Masks had to be worn outside at all times, even when just going for a walk outside. No one was allowed to travel outside of their 5-kilometer radius. And if someone were to break these COVID restrictions, they could potentially face up to 6 months in jail. And tennis players also had to make sacrifices for this Grand Slam to be possible in the middle of this pandemic. They all had to self-isolate for 2 weeks and go through quarantine in a designated hotel. And that meant that they almost had no time to practice before this important championship. And in fact, the lower ranked players were complaining to Tennis Australia that top seeds, especially those in the top 10, were given preferential treatment, which they claim gave them an unfair advantage when it comes to the performance at the Australian Open.
And how did the Canadians do at this Grand Slam?
So for the Canadian side, we had mixed results, but overall a few successful runs, especially from Milos Raonic and Montreal-born Félix Auger-Aliassime. They both reached the fourth round, so the final 16, when we started out with 128 players in the main draw. And Félix had defeated Denis Shapovalov in the third round, also a Canadian. And all of their results now made it possible for them to enter the top 20 in the men's game. I spoke with Andres Mena, the tennis coach of Concordia's recreational team, and he's feeling pretty optimistic about the future of Canadian tennis.
It certainly was a strong performance by Canadians. First, we have Raonic, who really moved Djokovic around the court. And that's hard to do when you're playing against the world number one. And then Félix had a consistent serve and impressive forehand shots. He just needs to have more control over his emotions. Mental toughness really is a huge part of the game, and that's what cost him the win. But he's only 20, so that should come with experience. So if we're being honest, Canadian tennis has a bright future for sure.
Now, Bianca Andreescu is also one of the Canadian stars that will be the future of Canadian tennis. In 2019, she won the U.S. Open in New York at the young age of 19, becoming the first Canadian male or female to do so in all of Canadian history. However, she did not play for an entire year before the Australian Open because she was suffering from a knee injury. But that is part of the game. She ended up being eliminated in the second round. However, all tennis players have to adjust to unpredictable circumstances, whether it's somebody's personal injuries or the pandemic that has fully reshaped the tennis season. But now we have an entire year ahead of us of tennis tournaments, so we'll be keeping a close eye on our Canadian tennis stars in the coming months.
Thanks for the update, Bogdan.
Thank you, Amanda.
That was our reporter, Bogdan Livinenko. Tomorrow, U.S. President Joe Biden is set to virtually meet with our very own Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in his first bilateral meeting. President Joe Biden tweeted yesterday, "I look forward to renewing the strong friendship between the United States and Canada and working to tackle the shared challenges we face." The meeting is expected to be lengthy and will include a session between Canadian and American cabinet members. Topics to be discussed include the COVID-19 pandemic response, economic recovery, and climate change, among others. This week, Texans are still recovering from the ice and snow that covered the southern state earlier this month. While the below-freezing temperatures have begun to ease up, many are still struggling to cope with the aftermath. Our reporter, Anna Justin, spoke to Janet Hanley, who lives in College Station, about 100 miles northwest of Houston. Hi, Anna. Could you tell me more about her experience with the snow?
Yes. So Janet has lived in Texas her whole life. She was born and raised in southern Texas, and she says that she has never seen this much snow in her 67 years of life. She says she checks the weather frequently, checks the weather forecast, and remembers thinking that these freezing temperatures just could not be true. But either way, she went out to the to the store to stock up on things before they started selling out.
What were some of the immediate repercussions of the snowfall?
So the first thing that a lot of people noticed that were that stores weren't able to stock their shelves with the normal amount of food, and things were all out of stock. It wasn't like during COVID where people were stocking up on a bunch of things and kind of hoarding groceries. It was more that the roads were so icy that trucks weren't able to deliver the normal amount of food to these stores. The roads, like I said, were really slick. And in northern Texas, they have salt for the roads in case it does get icy. But in southern Texas, they don't have salt. So they used sand on the roads, which was a temporary fix, but did not do much for long. So people just weren't used to walking and driving in those conditions. And according to Hanley, this has been a real issue for hospitals in the state who are already over capacity with COVID.
Every time I went out to check stuff, I always made sure I had my phone with me in case I fell. And that's one of the big problems they had here was hospitals were already pretty packed with, you know, because of COVID and everything else going on, the hospitals were already full. And, you know, there were a lot of people that had falls because of the ice. In fact, a friend of mine fell and she broke her ankle and part of her foot, and she's having surgery today.
Since the snowfall has melted, what problems are Texans still struggling with?
So Hanley is one of the more fortunate people. Her house was built fairly recently. She has a generator, so she was able to have heat during the power outages. But others were not so fortunate and don't have their houses were built long. Their houses were older, and they had trouble keeping their houses warm, and they had trouble keeping their pipes from freezing. So a lot of people had ruptured pipes. So because of that, there's now a huge demand for plumbers and for parts. Hanley said that Home Depot and Lowe's have been completely stripped down, and they're sold out of a lot of the parts that they need to make these fixes to these ruptured pipes. So people who haven't been able to get those plumbers and those parts have had to turn their water off, which is obviously another problem altogether.
Thanks for this update, Anna.
Thank you, Amanda.
That was our reporter, Anna Justin. The dance community in Montreal has been hit hard by the pandemic. Studios have been closed for around 11 months. Many have suffered from a lack of revenue, and some have even been forced to close. To make some money, most studios have shifted to online teaching. Nicole Alexakis has the story.
The Quebec government is loosening some rules starting next week. People will be allowed to skate at arenas and swim at indoor pools. However, gyms and dance studios will remain closed, and there's no information on when they will open back up. Julia Tripoli owns Tripoli Studios in Montreal. She says that dance studios have been left out in the cold by the government. She says her studio is the only one in Montreal to offer drop-ins rather than full sessions. This allowed her to close the studio without owing anyone money, in contrast to most studios who had to refund their dancers. At the beginning of the pandemic, Tripoli Studios was offering free online classes to support dancers' mental health. Revenue-wise, this didn't put Tripoli Studios at the top of their game. They were still paying full rent on an empty studio. Tripoli decided to start a GoFundMe page in August that raised close to $6,000 and allowed the studio to stay afloat until the end of 2020.
And then coming out of the new year, I felt like everyone just needed a little bit of a pause because everyone's schooling was online. They already have all these other classes that they have to take online. So for me, I've just been doing pop-ups here and there. And when my other teachers want to do workshops or want to do online events, per se, we've just been promoting those, but we've definitely taken a step back on the back burner just to make sure that everybody's mental health is okay.
Dancer Jessica Gagnosena is currently taking online classes with Emotion, a dance studio in Montreal. She believes that online classes have evolved the dance community for the better since people are now able to take classes from all around the world.
For people that have like influences that they really look up to and that they would like to take their classes, but it's either too expensive for them or they would have to save money for like a year to be able to like be there once they do a tour closer to home, and even then like pay hundreds of dollars just for the class and for the flight there.
For Concordia News, I'm Nicole Alexakis.
The pandemic has been difficult on everybody. For musicians and entertainers, the bulk of their revenue comes from live performances, something which in most parts of the country is currently impossible. In Victoria, British Columbia, regulations around restaurants are looser, which is opening up new opportunities for local artists and small venues to collaborate. Our reporter, Evan Lindsay, met a young musician who recently got the opportunity to perform for the first time since November.
My name is Jamie Hamilton. I am a student right now, and I'm also a musician. I've played at, so this is a restaurant down on Cook Street in Victoria. It's called the Collective Wine Bar. And I guess like 2 weeks ago, he asked me to play, and I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, I'm down for like any live performance right now. I haven't really been, I guess, reaching out to perform many places just because it's so hard right now, you know, and a lot of places, they don't want to, you know, do it just because of COVID. So I know that they must be struggling, right? You know, as well as other restaurants, right? So it's kind of, I guess, perfect for both of us. You know, I can go in, bring some more people in, and help them out, and then they're also helping me out, right? And this is like the tricky thing, because it's like, yeah, there's definitely like live music is not, you know, up to where it usually is, right? But the tricky thing about COVID is you never know what the other person is feeling. Like, you never know if it's like, you know, the restaurants are just trying to do everything in order to stay open, right? So they're just probably trying to follow these guidelines, because some people say, no, don't do live music, you know, it's not safe. Some people are like, yes, like, it's totally fine. So it's hard, because maybe these restaurant owners are just thinking, oh, I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't have live music because it's not safe for my guests. And who knows? I don't know if these artists want to. That's why I'm unfortunate that they still want to have artists in, and they still want to support and stuff, and it just means so much. So that's why I try to, whenever they want me to come in, I'm like, yep, you got it. Because I like to support them, and of course I like to perform.
That was Jamie Hamilton from Victoria, BC. Our thanks to Evan Lindsay for producing this piece. It's National Walk Your Dog Day, and more than ever, Montrealers have dogs to show off. The pandemic has prompted many to adopt furry balls of joy. But is it a sustainable option in the long term? Our reporter, Juliet Palin, has more.
With everyone at home all the time, many people are adopting pets to keep them company. It's gotten to the point where shelters are running out of animals. If you're hoping to adopt now, your chances are slim. Hadassah Al-Ansar is a student at Concordia University. She recently adopted a small Cocker Spaniel. This was after a long wait, when finally Cookie fell onto their lap. It was perfect timing.
Well, with the pandemic, we've been at home a whole lot more, and I wanted a little companion for me and for my family.
However, Cookie doesn't come without challenges. Al-Ansar admits he can be a handful.
So working from home and having this little energy furball has been challenging.
The Montreal SPCA has been overwhelmed with requests for adoptions. SPCA worker Céline Caligros says they've never had so many adoption requests. These days, you have to apply online, and you can only drop by if you have an appointment.
On fonctionne sur rendez-vous maintenant, donc les personnes doivent appliquer sur le site, et souvent on reçoit des centaines de demandes par animal.
With hundreds of applications per animal, Caligros says most people are looking for puppies and kittens. Currently, there are 6 dogs, 1 cat, 6 bunnies, and 2 turtles available for adoption. From Concordia News, I'm Juliet Palin.
That's your news to the left. Thanks for listening. For Concordia News, I'm Amanda DeFilo.